doesn't mind throwing a leg over the ball just quite.
Oh, he might be out of play for a little while.
We're back. Yes, hello and welcome to Football, the Wednesday edition of the Fox Football Podcast and the first for the year of 2019. We have just waved goodbye to an incredible month of football where the Asian Cup kept us up awake throughout the night and the A-League and W-League captivated us for the hours in between. And there was football everywhere for the month of January, and two men who were right in the thick of it join me as they do every week. Hello, Andy Harper. Hello, Brenton Speed. Welcome back to Oz.
Hello, Muzz. Great job by you and the team as well to put all that football to air over the past month. Great job.
How are you, Harps? Are you good to be
present.
Back?
Well,
glad
present.
To be back.
Yeah, present. Mate, I can't tell you how happy I am to be home. Love the Asian Cup like it's a long-lost sibling, but it's great to be home.
Now, speaking of long-lost siblings, the two of you have spent a lot of time together over the past month. In fact, you are like siblings. Bring something to the table, Speedy. Give us a little bit of behind-the-scenes Asian Cup. I'm tipping you spent a lot of time sitting in cars.
Yes, too much time, really. You know, up to 3 hours a day travel time when you're going to and from LAN or Dubai. So we watched a lot of A-League on YouTube, which is a phenomenon when you're overseas and there's no rights being held in that country. So
did you see any of our commentators say anything they shouldn't have in ad breaks?
Did that happen when we were away?
I think it was just before Christmas. No, it was actually, it was New Year's Eve.
That's right, it was too, yes. And poor old Andy got stitched up on the SIM card front. So he was a frustrated man in the back seat on many occasions, unable to watch the A-League because his bloody SIM wouldn't work.
Your chance to reply, Harps.
Well, it's true, and I had to look over through the gap between driver and passenger seat where Speed B located himself for every trip in the nice reclined position. I had to look through that gap that was available onto Speedy's small iPhone to watch the A-League from the back seat. I must say one of the big takeouts, well, I had two massive takeouts for the Asian Cup. One was that YouTube channel. When you're travelling overseas, it was just brilliant. The A-League, in large part, kept me sane when I was away.
and Speedy.
Yeah, and Speedy too. It was fantastic. The second one was just how Brenton Speed was misplaced at birth somehow in the nursery ward because he should be living in Vietnam. We went to the Vietnam-Iraq game, which was a stunning game of football, and Speedy looked like a kid in a candy shop. We sat in the Vietnam fans, just beautiful group of people, a lot of them smiley, great-natured. Mate, the Speed came alive. The Speed came alive, and I think a posting in Ho Chi Minh City wouldn't be untoward.
There's photographs of one Andy Harper taken by myself, B Speed, who was even closer to the action, was A Harper, lapping up the Vietnam fan experience more so than me, I'd argue.
You've spent a bit of time in Vietnam too, Speedy, of course.
I've been there a couple of times.
The Women's Asian Cup.
Yeah. And the Asian Cup of 2007, our
of course.
First posting.
Yes, of course.
I did a lot of time with Paul Trimboli and Ange Postecoglou in Hanoi.
Great city.
Yeah.
Great city.
All right. Well, let it not be said for a second that I didn't thoroughly enjoy that experience either. But the caveat, Speedy, you'll enjoy that. The caveat to your comment is that you can stage a photo for anything, aren't you?
And what about our fan park experience? For those who've been to World Cups past, we of course said, how good's this? I went for a little recce down in the Corniche of Abu Dhabi, which didn't have a lot going for it apart from the Corniche, it must be said, and the Louvre. But I went down there and I saw the fan park and they had a beach, like it was on the beach. So you go, you'll be able to watch the games at the fan park having a little paddle. How good's that? So we lobbed down there. I say, I tell Andy, well, let's go down to the fan park and watch the Socceroos because we happen to have a day off, their first Asian Cup group game against Jordan. So we go to the fan park and we sort of walk around. There's about 10 people in there. Look up at the big screen and they haven't got the anthems going yet. So Andy and I sort of turned to officialdom in some sort of Asian Cup shirt and said,
what doing?
You're going to have the game on, Australia? It kicks off in about 5 minutes. The anthems are on now. And Andy, what sort of response did we get?
Quizzical. Just to set the scene a little bit better, it was a beautiful blue sky day. And just in front of this massive screen, apropos any live site type setting, were these beautiful big blue bean bags. There was no one sitting in them. And speaking of staging pitches, the Speed and I thought, how about the two of us? How good is this going to be as a photo? The two of us lounging back in a big blue bean bag with no one else around, with a massive screen all to ourselves. And then we asked when the game was going to be on, and they said, oh, we're not sure if we're putting it on. We said, what, today? They said, no, for the whole tournament. We said, what are you waiting for? The Asia Cup 2023. I mean, it was just ridiculous. The lack of Mabo. They'd gone to so much trouble to set this thing up. You would not have even known the Asian Cup was on. It was bizarre.
That's a shame. We've spent some good time in fan parks at World Cups recently, Harps. Now, let's, as we always do at the start of the Bald Cast, we usually go with the player you've enjoyed watching over the past week, but given we haven't been on for over a month and given you two have both been at the Asian Cup and I've been doing the best with the A-League back here, give us a player that you've enjoyed watching over the last month. Start with you, Speedy.
Well, Almo Azali, he won the Golden Boot. He won the Player of the Tournament, rightly so, in the Asian Cup, given that Qatar lifted the trophy as well. And I hope that in years to come, Andy and I will be able to say we were lucky enough to watch him and call him in action in the Saudi Arabia group game, where he scored two goals, I think, to go to seven with Ali Daei, and as the most in an Asian Cup ever. And then he winds up breaking the record as well with that spectacular goal in the final. But I hope that he goes to Europe, as Jose Mourinho said during the tournament. He's good enough to play in Europe. Right now,
where in Europe?
Well, anywhere.
Yep.
Yeah, he's that athletic a striker and can score goals of any type. That reminded me of the Robbie Fowler goal that he scored against Charlton all those years ago, the one that he scored in the final. His aerial ability is Alan Shearer-like, dare I say it. He plays on the wing in Qatar in the Stars League with Al Dahail. Hardly scores a goal there because they've got a Moroccan striker in the middle. So, he should be playing somewhere as the focal point of an attack after what he's done at the Asian Cup, and hopefully that is in Europe, because he's a fantastic player.
What about you for a player you enjoyed watching at the Asian Cup, Hubs?
Yeah, well, just to put a little bit more context on Speedy's pick, great pick. There's the Iraqi striker, Muhannad Ali, was being seriously scouted by Juventus. So if he, the Iraqi striker, is good enough for the Serie A, one of the giants in world football, there's no question that Almo Azali is too. So I agree with Speedy. Mate, mine was the left fullback, 19-year-old from Vietnam, Van Hau. A team that caught a lot of people by surprise, not watchers of Southeast Asian football, but to the broader population. Vietnam caught a lot of people by surprise, and I just love watching this 19-year-old play. Fantastic. And I really hope that when they sort out the next World Cup draw, qualifying draw, Australia gets to play against Vietnam, not just so that we can watch in person Speed B in Ho Chi Minh City, but because I reckon they're a great little team and Australia can learn a lot from what they've done with some of their youngsters.
And on the Serie A front, you look who's played there recently, left-back Iraq Ali Adnan, who's now been sent packing by Atalanta, who scored that wonderful goal against Vietnam, coincidentally, to win a five-goal thriller in the game we were at. But Van Hau is a superior player to Ali Adnan right now.
I agree. That's a good call, Speedy. Yeah, I agree.
He should be somewhere in Europe as well, Van Hau, and hopefully those sort of players kick on to new levels.
Saw Van Hau being linked to a move to Thailand to play for Muang Thong in the Thai League. The player I'll choose, and I'll stick on the home front, was James Troisi, as a matter of fact.
Inspired by missing out.
Well, he drew a line in the sand, didn't he, with his comments when he wasn't selected, had a bit of a crack. Part of us at the time thought he might have been speaking on behalf of Antonis rather than just himself. But actually, since then, he's probably played his best football of the tournament. We've seen a couple of goal celebrations when he holds the hand up to the ear pretending to make a phone call, which is obviously mocking the fact that he never got the phone call for the Asian Cup. But I can understand why he wasn't picked for the Asian Cup squad, because he wasn't playing his best football at the start of the season. But since then, he's been great. And you watch him now and think maybe that's something that Australia could have done with over at the Asian Cup, that sort of creativity that he does provide. So good on James Troisi, who's had a lot of knockers, but is probably playing some of his best football.
And the other day in the win over the Mariners, he used his right boot, I think, four or five times in a row. That's something he's brought to his game, I reckon, in the last month as well. He started to use his right boot, which if a lefty does, suddenly they open up new avenues to goal. And sure enough, he did score a goal with the right boot.
Let's go back to the Asian Cup and the big questions, I guess, that we learnt coming out of it. Firstly, the expanded tournament. It was the first time that we've seen it. You'd have to say a success, Speedy.
Oh, without doubt, and this is something that Harps picked up on very early on. Would Vietnam have been there if it wasn't an expanded tournament? And even the Philippines, even though they got rolled in each and every game, very competitive against South Korea in a game that we called, only went down 1-0, and a lot of the other teams came in. I mean, Jordan, not a lot expected of them, and they topped the group involving Australia as well. Many thought they'd be easy beats in that group. India went so close to going through to the next phase as well, the round of 16, but for that late winner for Bahrain, a team that we thought provided great value as well with Miroslav Sukup, their coach. So a lot of these underrated teams at the Asian Cup gave plenty.
Harps?
Well, it was vindicated, the decision. A lot of us were nervous about score blowouts. The only team that didn't really cope at any point, looked like doing anything, in my opinion, was Yemen. But to top off the list that Speedy's volunteered, I mean, Kyrgyzstan and Turkmenistan gave great value, could easily have got through their groups. And I thought the expanded format was a roaring success, partly due to, I think, the poor quality of the top nations. I think as far as Asian Cups go, the Big Four, in which I include Australia, were very disappointing by their own high standards, which was, again, partly due to the improvement at the bottom end of the tournament, but partly because I just think the big guys are struggling. I mean, Australia and South Korea don't get through the quarterfinals. It's a bad result. And so, you know, big teams struggling provided a bit more opportunity for these newer teams. I just thought they were great. I thought the decision was vindicated big time.
Speaking of expanded tournaments, all the mail you were telling me, Harps, over in the UAE is that Qatar is going to be a 48-team World Cup. Well, I mean, it's probably good news for Australia because it makes their qualifying campaign a little bit easier. But what's your take on it?
Well, my take, we'll wait and see. Of course, everything's waiting, hinging upon that decision from FIFA, because we won't know the qualifying route until then. But all the journos were talking about it as though it's a fait accompli. I can't say whether it is or not, but I was looking at the Asian Cup, and I'm sure Speedy will back this up because we just observed so much of this stuff. To the extent that the UAE didn't deliver an optimum tournament was partly because of the seriously toxic regional politics there. And we saw a couple of those incidents. Indeed, there's a story today about an English fan being arrested for wearing a Qatar shirt at a stadium. I mean, if that's the case at the Asian Cup, and the World Cup goes from a 32 to a 48 team comp, and to cater for those extra games, FIFA is going to include other countries and their stadiums, and I can only think of the UAE and Saudi as being ready to go on that front. How on earth is football that powerful that it can deal with these geopolitics in the time that's available, where the Asian Cup very obviously showed that those geopolitics were just too strong for the tournament to really cope with? Not that the tournament failed because of it, but honestly, Speedy, would you agree you couldn't really get away from the aroma that permeated the whole thing because of the Qatar, Saudi, Bahrain blockade, etc.?
Yeah, the stories you heard about flights not going direct from Doha to an Abu Dhabi or a Dubai. You had to go around the world to get there if you were coming from Qatar. It was an absolute joke. And 48 teams, how many countries in the world? I mean, you're going to have a quarter of the world at a World Cup?
Yeah, it's over 200 registered with FIFA.
Yeah, so near enough getting towards that quarter mark. That's a joke. And 32 is beautifully set out. 8 fours. Suddenly you have the round of 16 straight away with the top two in every group. You get to a 48-team scenario. Suddenly you worry about third-place teams and all that palaver that goes on there. Just stick with 32. I mean, how hard is
that? However, on that, Speedy, I'm not necessarily a fan of the 48-team thing either. However, we've just been talking in violent agreement at how successful the Asian Cup expanded format was. And so if you're prepared to follow that logic, then an expanded World Cup format, you know, might give smaller countries a great chance to do something they'd never achieve otherwise. So I'm basically a fan of the 32 like you, but I haven't closed the door completely. But I just don't know how they're going to – I mean, you know, airspace is closed because of the blockade. How are fans supposed to get from one place to the next unless they can solve this rather deeply entrenched political issue in the region?
The other, I guess, takeout from the tournament is what can we learn from Qatar prevailing? No one expected Qatar to lift the Asian Cup at the start of the tournament. Obviously, some people were suggesting they were going to do well. I think going the whole way might have surprised most. But what can we take out of that? I mean, everyone's talking about the Aspire Academy and how much money they've thrown into development of football in that country. What's your take out and what can we learn from that, Harps?
Well, investment. They seriously invest and we seriously under-invest.
But we can never invest the amount of money that they're investing, of course.
Not amounts, but we can do a hell of a lot better, Muzz, with Will. We're just an investment shy in this country, not just in football, but for Pete's sake, on everything, infrastructure, telecommunications, fast rail. You know, it's like holding a cross to Dracula in the Australian sense when it comes to investment on that sort of stuff. So that's the mentality. Of course, the quantum... would be frightening, and I wouldn't necessarily prosecute that case, but we've got to get an investment mindset. That's the first thing. Look, they've got some great players. The challenge for Qatar under this coach is going to be when they're going to have to open up and play, because they had incredibly efficient, with Al-Mu'izz Ali and two or three others, incredibly efficient striking capacity, didn't take a lot of chances to score their goals and scored very good goals. And then could just defend in big numbers and did that very well and were lethal on the counter-attack. So I'm not quite sure how much sustenance that is there's in that for them when they play against some really big nations. And just on a tangent, you get to that cup final, two brilliant goals to blast Japan away, and then Japan came back and were dominating and get to 2-1. And then... just ran out of time and shouldn't have, because the penalty on VAR shouldn't have been given for Qatar. At 3-1, the game's dead. At 2-1 with Japan coming, I think Japan would have had a great chance of overrunning them had they been given enough time. And then Ermatov, and this is a big thing again, Speedy and I, we spoke about too much of the same thing over a month, but the amount of time he didn't add on was a crime against the showpiece final. I ran the clock on the head injury. That was 4 minutes in the second half from the corner when the Qatar defender got the head injury. When the referee stopped it to restart, it was 4 minutes. The VAR intervention was 3 minutes. So that's 7 minutes of the game stopped while the clock runs.
Stoppage time.
Hang on. Yeah. That's 7 minutes of no game but the clock running.
Yeah.
That's not adding on the goal scored and the restart time and the substitutions.
Yeah.
Then Ermatov, with 7 minutes of complete dead football, no argument, it's just not happening, he gives 5 minutes of stoppage time.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a big issue that is brewing around the world, and it's a complete anomaly that with all the people watching this, it's a World Cup final, you've got 1.5 to 2 billion people watching the World Cup final. If China imagine if China and India play off in an Asian Cup final, then you will have, 2 billion people watching. And the only person on God's earth who knows what the time is the referee. Well, that's going to be like the tailbone on the human anatomy, mate. That's going to go. And it's going to go soon, and it has to, because it's too arbitrary. And we saw in the A-League on the weekend with a referee who gave some decent added time, Adelaide clawing back that remarkably dramatic win in the 97th minute. I mean, that's the value of playing proper stoppage time.
Exactly. Chris Beef fell foul of it as well in the Asian Cup. I remember timing that one as we were in the lounge about to fly back. When he got his penalty decision clarified, he gave a handball for some reason. The VAR said, come and check that for a clear and obvious. Hello, no clear and obvious. Beef has to go and check the video, confirms his own decision, gives the penalty, which it rightly was. That took 3 minutes, 40 seconds. Stoppage time.
Mm.
Stoppage time. Hello. Put a stopwatch on and count the stoppage time and add it on at the end. The fourth official does very little except calm down Kevin Muscats and these sort of characters in the coach's box. Make him put a stopwatch on and just stopped the stoppage time and then added on himself, put it up on the board, all the stoppage time that's required because not enough is being played. Martin Atkinson, the referee in the Premier League, is bottling it at the moment, not giving penalties, not giving enough stoppage time. Kevin Friend in the Liverpool game against West Ham yesterday when the ball's pinging, one ball.
Quick, get back to the Asian Cup.
One ball is pinging around the stadium. Sorry for going off on a tangent, but then I want to go back to when I went to the Asian Games in 2006 and called the beach volleyball, actually, in Qatar. But they were so proud of that Aspire Academy, and it reminded you of what how the pride was there of the Australian Institute of Sport, where Australia had the development of the Vidukas of the world.
Mm.
That's not there anymore, is it?
That's right.
How much money did that require to keep going?
Righto, Harps, go back to your teaching days. Prepare a report card for the Socceroos.
Yes, well, okay.
C-minus, what are you giving them?
Well, I would say a delight to teach, but could do better. And if they want to achieve their career goals, must do better. Some poor choices. Look, before the tournament, the minimum for me was, the minimum pass is a top four finish in Asia. I sort of hinted at that before. I don't include the Saudis as the top four team in Asia, but my top four are Japan, South Korea, Iran, and Japan.
You said Japan twice. Who were your four?
South Australia.
Korea, Japan, Iran, and Australia.
And Australia.
Yeah. You with me?
Yeah.
And so by not hitting that standard, it's a dud. They failed. White spots. Ryan Grant was outstanding. Akotamides was great. Awim Abil, despite the horrible trauma that he's had to go through and is continuing to go through after, was outstanding. You question why Terry Antonis wasn't there. We spoke about that beforehand. I think that now echoes even louder. And in that final game, question Andrew Nabut's fitness. And if he wasn't fit, why did he come on? And maybe we found in Apo Janu a striker around whom we can build an attack. I thought we were a bit slow to move on him and endorse him, to be honest. That's what I thought of the Asian Cup.
Yeah, I think Andrew Nabut coming on in the final will be one of Arnie's great regrets and probably hasn't been spoken enough about. I'm not sure what the narrative on that was like back home.
Yeah, that was discussed. Yeah, it was discussed. He just looked out of his depth a little bit at the end there, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, he beat a man and then
the defenders would
run past him.
Yep.
He had no athleticism there. And that should have been determined on the training pitch the day before and he should never have played. And Cruz came off as well in that final after playing a fairly decent game. But on the Socceroos front, you look at the top two Australian players now in the Alex Tobin votes, who are Neil Kilkenny and Craig Goodwin.
Mm, that would be right.
Would they strengthen the Socceroos? Should they be in that 23-man squad? Should Neil Kilkenny be in ahead of a Jimmy Jago?
Neil Kilkenny is a better player than Jimmy Jago.
Yeah. Could he be a better player than Milligan as a midfielder?
Kilkenny?
Yes.
Well, I guess the other factor there is that you're probably not going to have Mark Milligan going forward.
Yeah. No, but they're about the same age, aren't they? Or Kilkenny's maybe got a couple of years up his sleeve.
Mm.
Is he a better midfielder than Milligan?
I thought you might bring that up, actually, Speedy. And he was actually going to be a player that I was going to say I've enjoyed watching over the last few weeks. And I was at Cooper Stadium on Saturday. And it did cross my mind to think, yeah, okay, SIES isn't the future of Australian football. But the future of Australian football is qualifying for the next World Cup.
Mm.
And we need to do whatever we can to get there. I think we've all realised it's going to be pretty hard. So does SIES play a part in actually just getting us to a World Cup? Because he's been phenomenal for Adelaide. And if we're picking players based on their form out of the Asian Cup, form out of the A-League, then yes, he does come into consideration. I thought it was very interesting too, looking at a few stats comparing 2015 to 2019. So Andrew's 2015 Asian Cup squad had 7 A-League players. Arnie's 2019 Asian Cup had 3. Focusing on a lot of players such as Jimmy Jago who are playing their football overseas at the moment. But, you know, you look at a player like Jimmy Jago and then you look at a player like Neil Kilkenny or SIS and think, could they have done a similar, if not better, job?
And I think Neil Kilkenny
probably playing more regular football.
Yeah, Kilkenny pays the price, I think, for being a bit of a problem child.
Mm.
That's the sort of sentiment you get out of previous squads. But everyone matures. And I think he needs to have be given another look at, because he's helping that Perth team play the football they want to play. And
he's been brilliant.
Top of the league. Now, the other thing that I think gets masked over a lot in the Ange Postecoglou to Graham Arnold reign is, when you look back on it, how often Tim Cahill bailed out Australia. Australia don't have a Tim Cahill anymore. Australia's greatest ever goal scorer. Think back to the Syria game that kept us alive on the road to Russia 2018. He comes up with both goals in that game, somehow, in a 120-minute performance. And how many other times? Go back in the Asian Cup, 2015, with the bicycle kick and the priceless goals he scored in that tournament as well, and how often he'd come up with a winner in the back blocks of the Middle East somewhere in a World Cup qualifier when Australia was struggling, and suddenly Cahill pops up and scores the goal against the UAE in the quarterfinal with that chance for McLaren set up beautifully from the right-hand side, and he rises for the header and it gets blocked quite comfortably by a defender. Cahill would have put that in the bottom corner. It's 1-0 Australia. We don't have a Tim Cahill at the moment.
That's another question. Was he given the tap on the shoulder as well as Milo Jedinak perhaps too soon?
I don't think so.
Should those two have maybe gone just for continuity, given they were at the World Cup, gone to the Asian Cup, and then we used the end of the Asian Cup as a regeneration period before we start World Cup qualifiers in June or whenever they might take place?
Tim Cahill is at the end of his career, isn't he? I mean, he's playing in the Indian Super League.
But if you're just talking about him coming off the bench for 15 minutes.
And scoring a goal. Okay, you can raise that argument. But I just think Australia, got out of jail many times with Tim Cahill. Yeah. We don't have one of those players anymore. And Jamie McLaren, for me, is a sixth choice striker, and he started every game. And Janu, as Harps alluded to, threw his hand up and was only called upon as a starter alongside McLaren in that final game as they changed the formation, which was interesting, in a quarterfinal tie. Janu should have been starting ahead of McLaren for at least one or two games prior to that.
Yep.
You know, I think once Apo showed what he was about, we weren't sure, really, because he came in under a blaze of headlines under Ange, then moved to China and everything went flaccid, and moved back now to Cyprus, and we didn't know what to expect. He wasn't even picked in the first squad, or it was a late call-up. But the very first hint of him taking the field in the Emirates, It just stuck out like the proverbials, right? This guy is a classy player, right? We might be able to build something around him. I thought we as the collective from Graham Arnold down, he's obviously got the sole choice on this, but we moved slowly on that. And I'd like to think that that's possibly an option as we move forward. You know, let's face it. People don't have to agree, but I thought that, I thought the top teams by reputation were below par at this tournament. And if, you know, it was hardly a visit to the proctologist from Australia's viewpoint, some of the teams we had to play, and we made heavy weather of it. And again, I'm banging this drum, but that whole World Cup exercise, those chickens came home to roost for Arnie, because that was just a complete waste in hindsight. Not in hindsight, we said at the time. That was seven games of high-quality competition where the coach for the next 4 years could start finding a striker, could start building, And that's a complete write-off now. Well, it was. And so we start from scratch again. And the incumbent now has to take the barbs that are going to come the way of the organisation, because the team flopped. I mean, you don't get out of the quarterfinals. You play a very average UAE team, who defended brilliantly, by the way, but still, you know, very average UAE team, and an Uzbekistan team. I mean, you're not scoring against these teams, and with or without a Tim Cahill, Speedy's point's right, but still, come on. You know, we can't accept that that's going to be the standard. We've got to push on.
And who are you blaming for the Von Marwijk appointment? Are you blaming Arnie a little bit, because there's the feeling that he didn't want the job at the World Cup because he feared them being flops there?
And he also wanted to finish a job with Sydney, which is understandable.
Right. So you think Arnie in the clear there, and it's down to the FFA making that Von Marwijk appointment?
Well, I can only report what I've said from the start, and I don't speculate on who said what to whom or owes what to whom or is contracted. Ange left. Who is the best available candidate or best candidate? I think, you know, most of the mail, and I was part of this, Graham Arnold, if he's the best available, give him the job. Arnie, if he's not available, we move on. who's the next best? And I said at the time, and I would have gone with Popovic. That whole World Cup experience should have been an investment in the program. And we said it that I couldn't see it unless Australia got through to the knockout stages of the World Cup. And great if they did, then there's a legacy, then there's a buzz. But we didn't. And it was it's not being revisionist because we expected it at the time. We should have invested then. So the decision makers are the ones who should have thought, you know what? If Graham Arnold, our number one pick, is contracted to Sydney, Sydney don't want to let him go, or Graham wants to finish the job, they're fine. Completely respect their decision. We go to the next, which is Popovic, and I stand by that.
Australia headed into the Asian Cup as the second, according to world rankings, the second highest ranked team in Asia. Where do you reckon we seriously sit?
Well,
six or seven?
And where do you form that ranking during the Tim Cahill era?
Mm.
So I think we dropped down significantly without Cahill. And no Moy helped build that ranking as well. Arzani at the World Cup was outstanding.
Mm.
Boyle scored those two goals, all missing, unfortunately. The injuries didn't help.
We can always talk about injuries, though. I mean, Boyle, Azani, Moy have 48 caps between them, of which Moy has more than 40 of them.
And
so,
they
haven't included him because he wasn't injured, because he wasn't considered.
Well, the UAE missed out on Omar Abdul Rahman.
Yeah.
And they had a broken leg during the tournament. I mean, you know, the best players in the world, and Tim Cahill was one of them, deliver for their team. That's why they're the best players in the world. Every country. Well, where would Iran be without Sardar Azmoun?
Yeah.
Where would they be?
Yeah, and we don't have Cahill. That's the point I'm making. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Australia has dropped down significantly in the Asian rankings, and they probably are around fifth and sixth at the moment.
Mm. Mm. All right. We wait for 4 years' time and at a venue to be decided for the next Asian Cup. What is continuing on is the A-League, including some incredible comebacks. As I mentioned before, it was at Cooper Stadium on Saturday night, and that was chaos. 7 goals, 3 red cards. You didn't know what was happening. One of the greatest A-League games I've ever attended. But it does raise the point, doesn't it? I mean, I love watching goals. I don't care about how bad the defence is. I turn up to football to watch goals. When I put on a pair of football boots when I was 60 years old, I was trying to score goals. The game's all about scoring goals. I thoroughly enjoyed it. But some people, of course, want to instantly go, oh, the defending in the A-League is horrendous. I think we've currently got our highest goal average. It's around about 3 goals a game at the moment after 17 rounds. And I think it's fantastic.
And it was 10 against 9 for a long time in that game. And often that leads
to a lack
of... And 7 minutes
of injury time. Yeah. It was brilliant.
Often that leads to a lack of goals as well when teams are reduced to 10 men and 9 and what have you. But, the planets aligned given that the home team was finishing so strongly. Brisbane have a habit of letting in late goals, and Adelaide wound up having a man advantage after losing Ken Ilso so early on. What was the take on Ken Ilso's red card? I look at it and I think it's a needless... studs up challenge, which Alex King sees as well and shows a straight red.
But I thought Alex King had a great game. I thought he got them all right. I have no problem with Ken Ilso being sent off. Nick Meredith said in commentary, those decisions aren't often made in the early stages of a match, which is true because, you know, usually refs give people a bit of a time and a bit of warning. But I know the boys back in the studio didn't agree. They didn't think there was much in the Ilso challenge. I didn't have a problem with it. He slid in and his feet were well and his studs were up and well and truly above the height of a ball.
And
the ball had long gone. So, you know, he gets sent off.
I think the one mistake he did make was the goal that actually gets Adelaide back into the game just before half time. Alex King gave a free kick, you remember? Goodwin was the one committing the foul on Hingett.
On Hingett, yeah.
Hingett tried to make that point.
Yep.
Goodwin got the free kick,
yep.
And it was dispatched by SIS. That's the only criticism on Alex King, who is the best young ref in the game, clearly. Adds the right amount of stoppage time, and Adelaide United end up winning it in the 7th minute, as we discussed earlier. And what about the left peg of Armiento, and what an inspired selection to bring him on off the bench at that stage. He put one across the face earlier, which was unable to be controlled at the back post. That ball was just delicious, the way it bent away from the goalkeeper, who thought, I can have that. Oh, no, I can't. And then Mille Elsnich is there to stick away the header. But, Armiento, look out for that left peg.
Yep, he did well. Now, Harps, I know this is of interest to you. 26% of games this season have had a result-changing goal in the final 15 minutes. So, basically, in the A-League, don't leave your seat before the final whistle's blown.
Yeah. Yeah, Matt, I'm with you. This has been a remarkable season. It makes for compulsive viewing. If we're allowed to go on a tangent, I know we do this, but I'm sticking to the A-League theme, but the Super Bowl was played a couple of days ago in the lowest scoring Super Bowl ever. And people say, do you enjoy it? Well, the purists, what's an NFL purist? I won't presume. But if that was a football match, then the purists would be saying, oh, mate, it was brilliant, Italian, Catenaccio style, stalemate, we loved it. But the punters were turning off in their droves. Then during the year in the NFL, they had that record score, the Chiefs versus the Rams, was 110 points or something. And that's what people want to watch. Now, you flick to the A-League, and this is not just an A-League issue. This is football worldwide. The culture is so conservative. We have a massive problem as a game allowing referees to be bold enough to administer the rules in favour of an attack. They're very good at backing defenders. But if we took – and so one of the things about the NFL Super Bowl match, as people were saying, and Speedy made this point, I don't really want to steal his thunder, but I'm on a roll. they stopped administering, throwing the yellow flags for pass interference and holding out a play and all that sort of stuff, which just turned the thing into trench warfare. Football does that routinely. Referees refuse to administer the rules. We had an interesting discussion in the UAE, a journalistic colleague prosecuted the case that maybe in great Jimmy Hill style, maybe soccer should make the goals bigger, even just by a ball circumference width around the goal frame. And my immediate retort was, well, we'll just breed bigger goalkeepers, which has happened over time anyway. But if the referees would just administer the rules as they stand, like an Alex King giving a send-off early in a match, then we would have the chance of getting maybe more penalties, opening up the match. But football has this cultural problem of a full weekend of 6-4 score lines. Because as soon as that happens, then the so-called purists, quote-unquote, in inverted commas, come out slamming, you know, the bastardisation of the game and the lack of defending. I mean, come on. The game...
I'd love a round of 6-4. That'd be brilliant.
Well, I think everyone would. In the cold, sober light of day, even the jihadists, the purist jihadists who sit there slamming everything that results in a goal because they just love defending, even they actually, in their private moments, put their head on the pillow and think, geez, that was thrilling. The tension was thrilling. We need to have both in the game, obviously. I'm not talking about throwing out the tactics, but the game culturally has to loosen up and stop being so conservative.
I mentioned that 26% of games this season have had a result-changing goal in the final 15 minutes. Part of that reason is that 64 of those have been conceded by a bottom four team. Now, I think what we're struggling with at the moment in the A-League is probably the reason why we've got so many goals being scored is that we've got three very poor sides in the Mariners, the Wanderers and Brisbane Roar, who, after 17 games, are numbers 1, 2 and 3 in the history of the A-League for the most goals conceded after 17 games with 40, 40 and 38. I mean, the three teams who, you know, do have very leaky defences. It's obviously leading to, as to what we said, with some very entertaining football, but it must be said that these sides are well below average.
Yep, they're absolutely struggling defensively. And how do they turn it around? Well, one point maybe is change the goalkeepers, as we speculated on earlier. Veteran Jan Jedovic going terribly ever since that brain explosion in a Sydney derby. And then Ben Kennedy, for mine, the Mariners' shot stopper, is not doing enough. Remember last year when they had Tom Glover there on loan from Tottenham and he got one game and then he was punted and never saw him again? And then you talk about the value of goalkeepers and game-changing goals. What about what Andrew Redmayne is doing? He's saved 6 points for Sydney FC. Mm. Where would they be without him saving those penalties? So, you know, Redmayne's on fire. He was a number two for a long, long time. Are there number twos around the A-League, other clubs, who would do a better job than Ben Kennedy or veteran Jan Jedovic right now? And you talk about intra-club loans. Is that where these clubs should be looking? Bring another shot stopper in and maybe we find the next Matty Ryan who might be wallowing somewhere else.
Speaking of goalkeepers, geez, I felt sorry for the poor Brisbane Roar goalkeeper that came on after Jamie Young was sent off. He did not look like he wanted to be there. And Jamie Young's grabbed him and given him the big pep talk on the sideline. But I think it actually made it worse for him. And then he's gone out. Craig Goodwin's hit the ball into the wall, picked up the rebound and slotted it basically straight through him. I was like, oh no, what a poor night for the young fella. Hopefully he bounces back this week when they play Sydney FC.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I think this goes to a key competition regulation issue, and it's the salary cap, which has to go. And maybe we're in a bit of a holding pattern this year. We're in a holding pattern to wait for expansion, and now we're in a holding pattern to see what the new league structure and rules are going to look like. Part of that has to be the salary cap's got to go. It just reinforces mediocrity. If there was enough go in the three teams you've highlighted in their ownership to say we've got to change this, they can go to the market. This crutch for mediocrity has got to go. It's a massive impediment for the game. And you talk about veteran Jan Jedovic, and look, firstly let me say I hope veteran's all right because he's had a terrible run. Secondly, looking at this professionally, this is inexcusable. And it's completely reinforced by this salary-capped mediocrity mechanism that we continue to have. Vedran, 15 December in the Sydney Derby, was when he was sent off for that first brain explosion. Since then, he's had two other ridiculous decisions from an experienced player, and he's only played three games. Since the 15th of December, he was sent off, then didn't play with suspension, came back for two games. Then in the third game against Wellington, that second run out of the area, which gave Wellington the goal. Then he didn't play for 3 weeks. Then he came back and conceded that late corner from which the goal came, and they lost the lead and finished in a draw.
Against the Roar.
Against the Roar. So since the 15th of December to the 25th of January, that's three and a bit, nudging four games for Vedran and three howlers, like ridiculous howlers. How can that be acceptable in a professional sense? And the only way I can explain it is because the Western Sydney Wanderers, in this particular case, have no room to go outside of their cap. And so I would be arguing that they should be just giving a younger keeper some more time. But it's easier for me to say that. Marcus Babbel has to make the decision. But you've got to question how those repeated errors can go through with impunity.
With no Asian Cup discussion next week, let's make sure we spend some time talking about Marcus Babbel, because there's a lot of people wondering whether the Wanderers should move on him looking ahead to next season. It's probably a discussion that deserves more time, but you can defend him on a lot of things. One thing you can't defend him on is why he is sticking with Vedran when you've got a younger keeper there. Like, surely if a player... And it's as though Vedran's got the yips. Like, it's the golfing, the football equivalent of golf's yips. He looks nervous. His body language is terrible. So give the poor bloke a rest.
Yeah, as much as anything. Like I say, my opening gambit was I hope he's okay, and the club close to that, and they've got to manage it. But that being said, from a purely, you know, analytical viewpoint, this isn't form that can be rewarded by constant selection.
And look who's a number two. Mark Berighetti is a number two at Melbourne City, isn't he?
Mm. Sitting
he
on
should
the,
be
sitting
should
on
be
the
playing football somewhere. Yeah.
Tandover Lappy in Perth, too, I think. Yeah. All right. The other thing that we're going to spend more time talking about next week is the W League, because we have semi-finals this weekend. Looking ahead to this weekend, Thursday night, Newcastle versus Wellington kicks off round 18, I think it is, of the A-League. Friday, it's Brisbane against Sydney FC. Saturday, the doubleheader sees the Wanderers versus the Central Coast Mariners. That is worth tuning into, because I think something strange is going to happen in that game, judging on how those two sides have gone in recent weeks. Speedy and Harps, I know you've got the double header in Melbourne, if you like, this weekend. So you're doing City versus Adelaide on Saturday night.
Now, Jamie McLaren?
Yes, with Jamie McLaren potentially making his debut. I'm told he wasn't far off actually playing last Sunday against Sydney FC. And then on Sunday, we've got the A-League wedged in between the two W-League semi-finals. So we're on air from 1:30 Australian Eastern Daylight Time on Sunday with Tara Walshy and Ellie Carpenter in the studio ahead of the Melbourne Victory versus the Perth Glory in the first of the semi-finals. Then it's the A-League, massive clash, 1v2, Melbourne Victory versus Perth Glory. can't wait for that. Who can forget when they played earlier this season and Chris Economides scored a late goal to give Glory the points? And then to wrap it up on Sunday, W League, the other semi-final, is Brisbane versus Sydney FC. I think Caitlin Ford has scored 5 goals in 2 games against Brisbane Roar so far this season. The Sydney FC have had the wood on Brisbane Roar, but Brisbane Roar finished higher on the ladder, so that should be an intriguing clash as well. And the Asian Champions League will start before we next speak to you. That's on Tuesday night with the Newcastle Jets taking on Persija Jakarta, who got the trip to Newcastle based on the fact that they beat Home United overnight. And who is the A-League player that plays for Home United?
Blake Powell. Blake Powell.
Incorrect.
Oh!
Andy Harper, who is the former A-League player who plays for Home United? Blake Powell's a great guess. He played for 16 of the 10 A-League clubs.
Oh, I got it. You got it, Harps?
Well, I was going to say, Blake Powell plays in the Philippines, Speedy. I thought your forensic research would have dished that one up for you.
No, but he was at Singapore, wasn't he?
Yeah, but he's now in the Philippines. Yeah. And the question was not where was he.
I reckon he played for Home United, maybe.
Who have you got? Who have you got, Harps? Ex-A-League player playing for Home United.
He played for every A-League club. Come on.
Yeah, well, everyone. Well, Liam Reddy's still in the
A-League. He's got an initial with an I in it.
Yes, correct. Speedy's on it.
I don't know.
Go, Speedy.
Isaka
Cernak, you've nailed it. He's ended up at Home United.
Did Blake Powell play for Home United? Oh, I wonder.
You're a genius if you've got that. Look at the expression in his face. If only you could see it, Harps. He's a very happy man. Almost as happy as he is when he's hanging around Vietnamese football fans. Now, we need to wrap it up. Everyone enjoy their football over the weekend. Great to be back with football. Speedy, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Maz. Good to be back. Can't wait for the A-League this weekend.
Harps, good to have you back. Enjoy the A-League this weekend.
Well, a week away from Brenton is too much, so I'm looking forward to the doubleheader in Melbourne.
Yeah, I don't know why we scheduled it that way. I'm sure you two have seen enough of each other. Thank you very much for joining us on football. Don't forget Garby and Simon will be back on Monday with the Monday edition of the Fox Football Podcast. This has been Footballed, and we'll see you next week.